Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix. An animated man's black silhouette walks a sandy path and freezes in place. His shadow is a chess king. Endgame Entertainment. Glowing white uppercase letters on a black background spell the word protagonist. Protagonist Entertainment. A man in his 70s with a full head of reddish-gray hair and a middle-aged brunette journalist prepare for a TV interview in a living room.
Dr. Harper, before we're live, I just wanted to say thank you for choosing
Peter Piper,
the rich history you have with other journalists.
I chose you precisely because we don't have a history. Now, don't fuck it up.
He smiles reassuringly.
15 seconds.
The interview.
People trust you. For decades have valued you.
Well, I think that's because people value the truth.
Right, but don't you think your discovery was just too dangerous to share with the world?
Look, this has been my life's work for over 40 years. There's nothing willy-nilly here. After much discussion, much debate, we all came to the same conclusion.
Which is?
Which is, once you explore all scientific possibilities and you come to consensus, how can you keep a discovery so vital to our existence a secret?
And that discovery, you proved the existence of an afterlife.
I prefer to call it a new plane of existence. Look, I can't comment on terminology like soul and heaven and afterlife, but what I can say with scientific certainty is that once the body dies, some part of our consciousness leaves us and travels to a new plane.
Your machine was able to capture brain wavelengths on a subatomic level, leaving the body after death. Is that?
That's correct.
Where do those wavelengths go? My point is, a new plane of existence is out there. Yes, that is no longer in dispute, but you can't tell us what that is exactly.
When you see a train leave the station, do you need to know where it's going to understand that you just saw it leave?
It's a tough pill to swallow.
At one point, so was the Earth being round.
Dr. Harper, why did it take you 6 months to address us? Where have you been?
It seems to me that I invited you here to my home.
Yes, you did. Thank you. But we only received that invitation after the suicide toll had rapidly reached 1 million. And during that time, celebrities, athletes, even a close colleague of yours all ended their lives.
Which is why I agreed to sit with you and try to calm the waters.
A TV crewman removes his headphones decidedly.
I want to ask you the question that everybody watching right now is probably wondering. Do you feel responsible for all those people killing themselves?
No.
That's it?
That's it.
The crewman stands before them.
Thank you, Dr. Harper, for my fresh start.
Andy!
He shoots himself in the head, and the journalist rushes to his side.
Help! Somebody. Call help, please. Right now, get someone here.
Dr. Harper looks on with a shocked and bewildered expression.
Oh, God. Turn those cameras off.
Netflix presents a Netflix original film in association with Endgame Entertainment and Protagonist Pictures. Title, The Discovery. A white screen transitions to a close-up of turbulent greenish water and whitecaps. The view widens to reveal the wake of a ferry boat crossing the sea on a foggy day. A dark-haired man in his late 30s stands on deck in an overcoat, frowning into the distance. He enters a deserted passenger lounge where a news broadcast is playing and sits with his back to the television.
Welcome back to our coverage of the 2-year anniversary of The Discovery. We'll be revisiting the touchstone moments of the past 2 years with retrospectives all weekend long. Hard to believe that it's been a year and a half since Thomas Harper's first and only post-discovery interview ended suddenly with an on-air suicide. Since then, the worldwide suicide toll has skyrocketed to staggering levels. Over 4 million people have taken their lives attempting to get there. As for Dr. Thomas Harper, he has not made a public appearance since that infamous post-discovery interview. Completely off the grid.
The man turns the TV off. then sits sideways across three adjoined seats with his feet up and his back against a window. He grimaces, pinches the bridge of his nose, and shuts his eyes. A view of the turbulent water.
I was listening to that.
A blonde woman.
I'm sorry, I thought that I was alone.
Hey, you know it's off-season. Why the fuck are you going to this dreary island?
Well, you're going there.
She disappears from view, reclining over three adjoined seats on the other side of the lounge. He crosses the room and sits opposite her. A closer view reveals she is around 30, with pale skin, light eyes, and platinum blonde shoulder-length hair with dark roots exposed.
Hi.
Hi.
He studies her with a knitted brow.
Are you like one of those lunatics who just sits next to a complete stranger in an empty movie theater?
You look so familiar to me.
I mean, it's possible we've met, but you just don't have a very memorable face.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I don't know why I said that. I didn't mean that.
She sits up.
The water. I'm just a little seasick.
He offers a prescription bottle.
That's weird. It's your lucky day. I don't normally carry these around. Vertigo.
I'm not dizzy.
You can't treat vertigo, just the effects. That's for nausea.
What, do I look like the kind of girl who's just gonna, like, take a pill from some strange guy?
Fair enough.
She pops one in her mouth and takes a sip from a thermal water bottle.
Isla. My name's Isla. I don't look like an Isla, though, you know. Your first 3 years, you really look like whatever name you're given. Then by four, you either settle into your name or you just... What about you?
What?
What's your name?
Will. Stevenson.
She mouths his name and stares at him.
What?
I'm just trying to see if you look like your name.
What's the verdict there?
I don't know. It's too early to tell. You know, Will is just such a, like, Will name.
You're really something.
Well, happy second discovery anniversary, Will. They said on the news they're expecting, like, a whole slew of suicides today. You know, people trying to get there for the anniversary.
I heard something about that.
Did you see that video of those dumb cheerleaders taking pills on the 50-yard line? I just can't get behind the concept of suicide groups. It's so disingenuous, you know? It just feels so weak.
You don't believe in the discovery?
No, I don't believe in suicide groups. The discovery is... I mean, the proof is overwhelming.
Proof shouldn't be overwhelming. Proof should be definitive.
So you don't believe?
I don't believe the way everybody else does. No, I don't.
And how's that?
I'm a neurologist. 3 months ago, I had a patient, really young, found out that she had brain cancer. Very sad. She reacted to that diagnosis as though I just handed her a fucking winning lottery ticket. And it wasn't because she hoped that maybe she was going someplace better. It was because the discovery made her think that it was guaranteed.
Well, yeah. Death used to be something we just had to live with, and now it's a convenient way to escape pain. That's okay.
That's okay. Another plane of existence, maybe. Who knows? But I look around, I see a lot of people jumping out of planes hoping that they're going to grow wings. And reality and fantasy are mutually exclusive. They don't exist in the same space.
A digital display with the motto, "Stay in this life," continuously tallies a climbing suicide rate of over 4 million. Later on a windy ferry dock, Will is perched against a pier post watching Isla as she tries to hitch a ride. She smokes a cigarette and paces in a vacant parking lot, wearing a woolly pale pink coat and a knapsack.
What?
When I was 5, I had an accident and I died for about a minute. When I was resuscitated, I told my parents that I saw something. Flashes. Little boy. Me, maybe, or my brother. I felt stranded.
Stranded where?
This empty beach. It doesn't matter. It was a dream. It was a dream that I embellished after I woke up.
She trots toward an approaching car with her thumb out. It drives past her.
Why would you make all that up?
I think it's our instinct to search for meaning, and when there is none, it's our instinct to create meaning, and we just lie. We lie to ourselves.
You are so annoying. Has anyone ever told you that?
Yeah, they have.
Oh, thank God we only have like a minute left together before we're strangers again.
You think it's gonna be a minute this time of year? You're crazy.
She holds out her thumb and a car stops to pick her up.
Crazy, but right.
Yeah, but that's the attractive girl component, and I didn't factor that in.
You better work on your math.
Hey, for whatever it's worth, I think you do look like an Isla.
How many of us have you met?
He holds up one finger and she gets in the car. A pickup truck approaches as the car drives away. Will collects a small duffel bag from the curb and climbs in the truck. It pulls a U-turn in the empty parking lot and drives off. The driver is a man in his late 20s with untidy red hair and a beard. He takes his eyes off the road and his hands off the wheel, attempting to light a joint with the window open. Will grabs the wheel.
I got it.
No, I got it.
Well, I don't want to die before we get there, Toby.
Toby brushes Will off, cups his hands around the joint and lights it. He takes a drag and flicks the ash out the window. They pass a cemetery burial taking place in the rain.
What's going on over here?
Eddie.
Wait, Eddie Iodice? Eddie died?
Yeah, just to get there. Just to fucking get there. Guy pulled a Marilyn Monroe, downed a whole bottle of pills, right there in his bedroom. Good dude, too. Real pity.
You didn't want to go to the service?
I would rather stick my dick in a wood chipper than go to another fucking funeral.
Got it.
You know, I'm not as stupid as you might think. When you called the other day and I told you that Dad had built something new, after that conversation, suddenly he wanted to come home.
You're sounding just as paranoid as him now.
Later, the truck is stopped in a grassy laneway while Toby unchains a gate.
Dad said he needed to change things up. People knowing our address was too dangerous. I'm sorry I couldn't tell you on the phone, but we don't trust phones now.
The truck proceeds on a long, muddy driveway bordered by brush and fallen autumn leaves. It comes to a stop and Toby gets out, wearing a hooded coat over a yellow jumpsuit.
Here we are.
Will climbs out, collects his bag from the truck bed, and follows Toby through a gap in a hedge.
Off to see the wizard.
Will stops to stare at an enormous castle-like mansion before following Toby across a vast lawn.
What the fuck is this place?
It used to be a summer camp for troubled youths, which I never really understood, because if they're bad kids, why would they deserve a fun summer? You know? But then it shut down and Dad bought it. What do you think?
I think it's completely insane.
Well, the truth is we just needed a lot more space to house things.
House what things?
These people were all affected by the discovery. Some of them arrived here after two or three failed suicide attempts. We gave them a home, something to live for in this life, a reason to contribute.
They pass people in various colored jumpsuits doing yard work and doing chores in a busy kitchen. Then Toby leads the way to a back hall where they stop.
Real quick. Just an
FYI, FBI type thing. Protocols, no cell phones.
Yeah, okay, let's go.
They arrive in a spacious hallway filled with natural light. Then at a doorway, a man in a red jumpsuit stands aside.
Don't worry.
Toby enters a passcode on a keypad and leads the way into a laboratory where a burly black man is speaking into a handheld voice recorder.
This is truly thrilling. I can only compare it to the model train set I left for someone myself on my birthday.
A young brunette woman in a yellow jumpsuit.
Cutting him a little close.
Oh, well, you know me. Pins and needles, needles and pins.
Those goddamn machines. Who the hell's that?
His other son just returned. Surprisingly taller than I remember.
It's good to see you again, Cooper.
Will, Lacey. I'm
all well. Where's Dad?
Will steps toward Dr. Harbor, lying unconscious on a table, hooked up to nostril tubes, IV drips, and electrodes. Cooper works with monitoring equipment wearing a white lab coat over a yellow jumpsuit.
Is he dead?
No, of course not.
He is now.
15 seconds.
Dad?
Whoa. Oh, take it easy. We're just running some tests. It's all routine.
10 seconds.
Paddles charged and ready.
Dr. Harbor receives defibrillator shock.
So they're recharging the body to reboot the brain. As long as he's ever officially under is like 60 seconds.
Will walks away while Toby continues to monitor their unconscious father. Will stands outside in the rain on a terrace with a view of a big gnarly old tree with no leaves. He pinches the bridge of his nose and closes his eyes. Brief scenes of people gathered in the cemetery, then a man in a narrow hallway wearing a gray jumpsuit. Toby approaches with the hood up on his coat.
So Dad is now killing himself and electroshocking back to life.
No. Kind of. But you're looking at this all wrong. You're wearing whatever the opposite of, what is it, rose-colored glasses. That's what you're wearing. Shit-colored glasses. Anyway, you shouldn't worry because all of this is being closely monitored and controlled. And we both know you've always been slightly skeptical of everything.
Dad started a cult.
No.
Can you not see that? This is a cult. All the way down to these followers in different colored jumpsuits.
No. There's no hierarchy here, Will. Dad calls it distinctions in clearance. That's all. It's not a cult.
Different straitjackets.
Well, you're the one that wanted to come back here, if you'll remember, for whatever reason.
Dr. Harbor.
Right?
Now that, right there, is the million-dollar question. Welcome back, Will.
Will and Dr. Harbor sip drinks, sitting amid the equipment in the laboratory.
You mind telling me something? What are you doing back here?
I'm here because I want you to stop it. I'm asking you just to put an end to all this.
How would I do that?
Say that you were wrong. Just take it all back.
I can't take it back, Will, because it's the truth. And who knows better than you? You were the inspiration for all of this. Aren't you curious?
Please don't say that. That's not... I wasn't.
Ah, but you were. Hang on.
Dr. Harbor puts on a pair of glasses and reads from a wrinkled sheet of paper.
Therefore, it is my belief consciousness should be considered as another state of matter.
Please don't.
Hang on, let me get this other part. It gets good. Properties of consciousness arise from the physical laws that govern our universe.
I was wrong.
You don't believe that.
We were wrong, Dad. We were wrong because a lot of people died. And a whole lot more people are going to kill themselves while you experiment here in this ridiculous fortress.
So just slamming on the brakes, 40 years' work? I'd be saying I'm responsible.
Maybe you are.
So you think I've gone too far? Well, I don't think I've gone far enough. We opened the door for these people, Will. They know it's there. Now we have to show them what's behind it.
Harbor leaves. The sky is gray as Will strides across the grounds in his overcoat. He looks over his shoulder at the mansion without breaking step. Then he passes the big tree where a few residents are relaxing on wooden benches. He treads past four White Cross grave markers on a hillside. Then he comes to a stop, takes a deep breath, and looks out at the ocean. A scene of murky seawater and fabric churning. Will clenches his eyes and pinches the bridge of his nose. Then he blinks at a view of a beach where Isla is hunched over, packing weights into her knapsack. She closes the knapsack, fastens it to the front of her body, and marches towards the sea.
Isla!
Will runs in her direction. A view of Isla's back as she wades steadily into waist-deep swelling waves, her woolly coat fabric dragging on the water's surface behind her. The water reaches her shoulders. She stares ahead with her mouth agape, then submerges. Will has discarded his coat. He splashes into the water at a full run in his sweater and jeans. He dives in and swims a rapid front crawl towards the place where Isla went under.
Isla! Isla!
He dives under and pulls her up.
What are you doing?
Your brother!
She hangs off him as he lumbers back into shallow water.
Get up! Get up!
They wade back to the beach.
Why are you doing this?
None of your fucking business!
You sit here on that fucking ferry and had a conversation with me, knowing that you were gonna do this the whole time.
You were supposed to be the last person I ever spoke to. You don't get to just change that!
Oh, you're not even emotional about dying.
I'm not emotional about anything.
They stand panting in heavy, water-soaked clothes. The sun shines as they stride along a seaside walkway. Will tries to drape his coat around Isla, but she pushes it off. Back at the mansion, Will speaks with Toby.
I'm just concerned that this will all be perceived unfavorably by some.
She was going to catch pneumonia, Toby.
I still don't know what you want me to do with her.
You told me that you take in people who need help. She needs help.
She still can't just stay here. We have rules.
Then can we make an exception? In her case, please. We're talking about somebody's life. We have no idea if she will attempt or try to...
She walks in on them.
Kill myself again? You can say it. I know what happened. I was there when you ruined it.
She and I have been getting along great.
We still have rules. She has to talk to Dad, and she has to take the questionnaire.
What's the questionnaire?
Can we
be... Isla gapes at Dr. Harbor as he enters.
Will, you have a visitor.
Your dad is Thomas Harbor?
Lacey runs sensors from the questionnaire equipment to Isla's wrist.
So nobody but the conductor, which is me, is going to know your answers. Everything is completely discreet here. And now Lacey will be giving us some privacy.
See, it used to be about global exploration, you know, discovering new land, and then it was space travel, shining a light on the dark corners of the universe. And now it's exploring what comes after this life, seeing what's next. How old are you?
While Isla's questionnaire continues, Will wanders into a bright room with large windows where residents in various colored jumpsuits are on their knees, meditating. Next is a recreation room where people are socializing.
Do you accept the fact that time is a nonlinear illusion created by man?
Pass. I don't know what that means.
You know, there are no right or wrong answers to this questionnaire.
Then why do you bother giving it?
It's a good response. Okay, greatest ability and most disappointing weakness.
I guess I'm good at seeing what makes somebody tick, at understanding who they really are.
Weakness?
I'm able to understand them, but I'm not able to care about them.
Somebody mentions the word subconscious to you. What do you think?
Memory.
Dig deeper.
Hidden memory.
Would you say that you suppress emotions?
I don't really like talking about myself like this.
We don't have to like it. You know, we think about ourselves every day. Everything is from our own perspective. So as much as you may not want to indulge yourself in looking at your most inner thoughts, they're there. Make no mistake, they are there.
Will wanders past framed photos and articles on a corridor wall.
You believe in a soul? If not, close your eyes.
She closes her eyes.
Okay, now let's just say a soul does exist. Where in the body do you think it would be?
I think if there was a soul, it would belong in the brain.
Wow. Now that's interesting. Most people say the stomach. But I like that you didn't.
Will takes a three-member family photo out of its frame and unfolds it to reveal a fourth person, his fair-haired mother.
Have you ever experienced sudden loss?
Yes.
In what aspect of regaining normalcy after losing someone was the most difficult?
Inanimate objects, maybe? Like my coffee table, I've had it for years and I've probably looked at it a million times, but familiar objects just became distorted and unfamiliar. I started to hate my ceiling fan, my cereal bowl, my tea kettle.
Okay, last question. Are you legitimately suicidal?
She stares at him.
If you knew what came after this life, do you think it would affect your decision making or maybe even make you change your mind?
Maybe. Knowing could change things.
Will discovers a cozy, cluttered room with a set of bunk beds in it. Toby joins him.
How did you know this is where you're going to be staying?
I found our old bed.
Yeah, I see that, and you should thank me, by the way, because I fought long and hard to keep all the faithful here.
He lies on the bottom bunk.
How's Isla?
Oh, that's actually why I'm here. Well, she's dead. No, she's not. She's not dead. That was a bad joke. But the questionnaire's all wrapped up. She can stay.
Yeah, good. She needs to be looked after. She could try again.
I don't think that's going to happen. Well,
Toby beckons to Will, and they stand facing each other with the top bunk between them.
Because tonight, everything changes. We finally unveil it.
What is it, Toby?
Dad wanted me to invite you to a little gathering tonight, just a select group.
Boy, this is nothing like our old house, huh?
Toby plays guitar in an auditorium at night. The scanned audience wears red or yellow jumpsuits, except for Isla in gray and Will in plain clothes. Cooper and Lacey wait in a hall.
It sounds to me a lot like you are advocating murder.
I'm not advocating murder. I'm just pointing out that most people don't look at ending somebody else's life the way they do their own.
He talks into his recorder.
Where is he? It's about to happen.
I can't tell when you're talking to me or that. It's really annoying. Anyways, what I'm saying is people are killing themselves to get there. At a certain point, they're going to use the same logic to kill somebody else because they're just sending them somewhere else, right?
Finally, he's here. And he is not wearing the temp jumpsuit I left for him.
Harbor addresses the audience wearing a white lab coat.
We're programmed to process our experiences as having a beginning and an end when, in reality, doesn't exist. It's just one long, drawn-out middle. Now, some of you here are newer than others, but I wanted to create a select group that could really see what it is that I built. But before we do that, I'd like to take a moment and have you join me in bowing our heads.
People in red or yellow jumpsuits comply.
And let your subconscious take you somewhere else.
Isla leans her head back and closes her eyes. Will looks straight ahead.
I'm sort of amazed that you get swept up in this easily. You don't strike me as say your prayers to
him. Just because somebody doesn't believe in God doesn't mean they can't pray.
What kind of an atheist talks to God?
She looks around, then puts her head back again and closes her eyes.
Why did you give me a phony bullshit last name?
It wasn't phony. It was my mother's maiden name.
Where is she?
She's dead.
She looks at him.
How did she die?
Because of my dad.
She raises her head.
Now let us come back into this moment.
Everyone gives their full attention as a young man wearing red comes on stage with an electrode net on his head.
I now offer you the opportunity to see the afterlife. I can now record where we go.
Will's eyes dart around the room as Dr. Harbor smiles. The audience remains still, listening to the music while observing the young man standing before them. Afterwards, in a tiny bedroom, Cooper hands Isla some paperwork.
Please, get these back to us at your earliest convenience. And again, these living quarters are just temporary until we can find you a more suitable room. When I first moved here, I slept on a cot in the kitchen. Glamorous.
Well, I'm supposed to be at the bottom of the ocean, so this should be fine. Can I have a pen?
Will enters.
Non-disclosure agreement.
Well, considering the sensitivity, it's a fairly standard document.
Hey, Coop, could we have the room just for a second, please?
Cooper talks to his recorder as he leaves.
You remember that awful week when we slept on the cot by the fridge? My back sure has.
Hey. So, I know that device is very compelling. Can we talk about it for a second?
Oh, I'm not allowed to talk about it because I just signed a non-disclosure agreement. So your dad's a little weird. Who cares? It doesn't make him wrong. I mean, listen, Poe fucked his cousin. It didn't make him any less a writer. I want to see if that machine does what he thinks it does.
Well, what if it did? How would that change things?
Well, you don't go on vacation without looking at the brochure first.
Toby walks into the bunk bedroom while Will is unpacking.
Hey, I'm sorry, were you sleeping?
I'm standing.
Well, yeah. That's just something you're supposed to say, I guess. But since you're up, would you mind coming downstairs and taking a look at something for me?
Yeah, sure.
Isla's looking through a fridge in the kitchen and notices them passing through the back hall.
Hey, where are you guys going?
It's nothing. Don't worry about it.
She follows them to a meeting in Dr. Harbor's office.
When he flatlines, think of it as a light bulb turned off by a switch. Flip it on, flip it off. But going under, hooked up to the new device, you're not just flipping a light switch. You're essentially detaching the entire bulb.
So I'd say that if you go under again, you're coming back with next to no brain functionality. I'm sort of surprised it hasn't happened already.
Lacey.
I know you wanted to be first, but if you don't come back, what's the point?
We just go back to the drawing board, right? I mean, it can still work. We just need to find a new way to...
You need a cadaver.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt. Where do you guys plan on getting a corpse?
I have a corpse idea.
Will rides in the pickup truck bed as it travels at night. Isla is in the passenger seat next to Toby, who was driving with earbud headphones in. She grins slightly and looks at him.
Am I being rude?
Huh?
Am I being rude?
No.
He offers her an earbud.
Care to listen?
Sure.
Crunchy, groovy grooves on a serene night.
They each wear one earbud and listen to the music.
Can I ask you something?
Mm-hmm.
Will mentioned what happened to your mom earlier.
That she killed herself?
Not exactly. So she was trying to get there?
No, that was a good couple years before the discovery.
A male clerk with dark curly hair is working at a desk behind a counter. A poster on the wall bears the slogan, "Stay in this life." Toby arrives at a window and taps a bell.
Yeah.
The clerk unlocks a door remotely. Toby walks through and shuffles up to the counter.
How you doing?
In the midst of life, I am in death.
That was weird. I was just wondering if you could help me out. My cousin, Billy, he's gone missing, and it being a 2-year anniversary of the discovery, we're all just a little worried. Really worried.
We got 3 John Does in this week. How long has he been missing?
Looking at bodies in a morgue.
Nope. No Billy here.
Bummer. It would have made my life a hell of a lot easier. Sorry, that was insensitive. They just got me running rampant here. I'm doing the job of 5 people.
Off-season cutbacks and whatnot, yeah. Can I give you a description of Billy? That way, if he does come in, you can keep an eye out for him.
Of course. Let's go to my office.
The clerk zips up white body bags, shuts off the lights, and leads the way back to the counter. Toby tampers with the door lock on his way out. Isla and Will arrive at the unlocked door and sneak into the morgue. Will stands looking at a row of white zippered body bags on gurneys, while Isla consults a list and reads tags identifying each corpse.
I'd like to point out you're reading off a laundry list of corpse requirements right now.
Aneurysm that won't work. It'd be nice if you could help me, seeing as we're breaking and entering.
Toby is at the clerk's counter.
Like, pouty type face. And then, he's got, a birthmark on, let's see, on his right elbow. But you're not writing any of this down.
Well, I think I've got more than I need to go on here, so.
But we haven't even gotten to the lower half of his body.
The morgue.
Don't you think it's weird how all these people were alive a few hours ago? You know, they had fears and desires they could exercise.
I don't think it's weird. I think it's fucking sad.
Maybe they went someplace better.
Yeah, maybe they went someplace worse. Maybe they went someplace that we can't even begin to comprehend.
All the more reason to see what your dad's machine shows us.
Shit.
He shuts his eyes and rubs his brow.
52 massive coronary. Well?
She unzips a body bag revealing the head of a dead man.
Meet Pat Phillips.
Pat's body has balding gray hair and a neatly trimmed beard.
Pat Phillips is as well.
They look over their shoulders as they race down a corridor wheeling a white body bag on a gurney. Next, Will and Isla ride in the truck bed with the body between them.
I don't really like that creepy room Cooper put me in. I'm going to sleep in your room tonight.
Will gives her an unconcerned look. Later, they stand with their arms crossed, staring at the bunk bed.
Top or bottom?
The lights are out as she nestles comfortably under the blankets in the top bunk, while below, he lies on his back, staring.
We could talk, you know.
When I'm nervous, I talk too much or not at all.
Well, you're safe here. I mean, nothing leaves the bunk beds.
When I first got here and they gave me that jumpsuit, it had a V etched on it. I wonder what that stood for.
Visitor, maybe?
Is that a guess? That was a pretty good guess. It's like one of those really obvious answers that only seems obvious after you find out about it. Were you really smart when you were growing up? I bet you were. I was told that I demonstrated an early ability to recognize spatial patterns, whatever that means. But I always just took it as one of those things that a teacher tells to a parent to make them feel better about their shitty kid. Like, Gordon is very good at drawing circles. Gordon draws circles at a more advanced level than the other children. These bunk beds really worked out well because they spared me the awkwardness of having to tell you I'm not gonna fuck you.
Sorry, all I heard was something about circles and not fucking me.
I don't want to be the only fucked up person on this bunk bed, Will. Maybe tell me about your mom now.
There's not much to tell, you know, she killed herself. On their anniversary.
How did she do it?
She'd made them dinner, and my dad didn't even come out of his office. If he even just hinted that he gave a shit, who knows, but couldn't be bothered. So she went upstairs, took a bath instead. Next morning I found her in the tub.
And so you left?
Yeah, I had to. I couldn't be around what I knew. It was like everything that was recognizable sort of instantly became unrecognizable.
Sometimes I feel like I'm taking someone else's spot and then I feel sad.
How do you mean?
Like being here alive is a waste because I don't enjoy it. I'm not happy or grateful. Taking a spot away from someone who maybe would have gotten something more out of it.
Yeah. I guess I don't think it works that way.
Here's something I haven't heard anyone talk about. Do animals have an afterlife? Bunnies, kittens, pigs, monkeys. What happens to them after they die? I mean, I feel like they really deserve an afterlife. Do they have their own animal afterlife? And if they do, is it subdivided by species? Because it feels like something as profound as an afterlife shouldn't practice segregation. And what happens to a child?
Lying on her side, she reaches down to him with one hand.
Hold hands till we fall asleep.
He clasps her hand, and she closes her eyes.
This doesn't seem entirely fair.
He stares at her hand and strokes it with his thumb. Later, Isla, Lacey, and Toby, Dr. Harper, Cooper, and Will are in the lab, gathered around Pat's body, reclined on an examination bed with the electrode net on its head. A web of transparent wires extends from the net to a large machine, which stands behind the head area. Toby operates control equipment. Lacey wears blue gloves as she adjusts each electrode on the corpse's scalp. Cooper speaks into his recorder. Isla gently straps one of the wrists to an armrest. She examines a wave tattoo on the forearm. Then she studies Pat's face as he seems to be sleeping peacefully.
Lacey?
Lacey pushes a button and a light comes on in a large cylinder where all the wires are connected above the corpse's head.
Okay, Toby?
Toby makes an adjustment to his equipment, causing the corpse's head to twitch. Dr. Harper watches a staticky monitor screen.
Did you hit it again?
The corpse's head twitches. The monitor screen remains dark and staticky.
Again. Hit it again.
I'm hitting it.
You hit it again.
You're gonna fry the body.
Toby, hit it again. Again. Hit it again.
again. Hit it again.
The machine shuts down. Dr. Harbor looks around with a stern expression. The others watch him tensely as he leaves the room. Afterwards, they mill about in the waiting area in the hall outside the auditorium.
Is this just a setback, or...?
I'm really not sure.
Will enters the lab alone, checking over his shoulder as he advances towards the monitor screen. He takes a tool out of his back pocket, opens a panel on the monitoring machine, and tinkers inside. He closes the panel, then crosses to the corpse and removes the wrist straps. He bends down to adjust something at floor level. He stands up to see vague black and white images on the monitor screen. He moves closer and gapes at an out-of-focus scene of a car interior from the driver's perspective while driving at night, with the windshield wipers slapping back and forth. He looks over his shoulder at Pat's corpse, lying peacefully with the electrode net on its head. He turns back to the monitor to see a hospital emergency entrance, as if through the eyes of someone walking towards it and entering through a revolving door. This point of view continues as the person proceeds through a hospital corridor and passes a vacant nurse's station. A dark-haired woman emerges from a patient's room and addresses the person directly. Will turns the monitor off and busies himself with the corpse as Dr. Harper enters with Toby.
Hey.
What are you doing with my body?
Your body is due to be cremated at noon, so I'm getting it ready.
We do still have a little time to prep a redo.
Redo? Guys, come on. You almost fried the body. You do this redo, you're going to cremate him early, all right?
Toby, rustle up a van. Will's right.
Toby fiddles with his hair and scratches his head, then leaves reluctantly.
That's good. Seeing you back in the labs again, it's good. It's where you belong.
Dr. Harbor leaves, and Will takes a deep breath. Later, Dr. Harbor stands with Will and Toby on a back porch in daylight, as two workers in blue jumpsuits load the heavy white body bag into a panel van. Isla is perched nearby smoking a cigarette. Harbor's face falls as he looks across the lawn to see Lacey conferring with three other women, each in a different colored jumpsuit.
Toby, I want you to locate me a new corpse immediately.
Will looks at Toby, who stands glumly with his head down and his unruly bangs shielding his eyes. The men are gone from the porch when Lacey walks past Isla, who is still outside, smoking.
Hey, can I ask you something?
Okay.
How'd you end up here?
Why? I came home and found my dad and my sister hanging in my living room. To get there.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. They didn't want me to come.
Isla raises her eyebrows as Lacey hurries inside. Later, Isla sits next to Will while he drives the van.
Can you imagine feeling abandoned because your dad left you out of the family suicide?
He gazes at the road ahead.
What's wrong with you?
No, I'm just processing.
Oh, I mean, do you ever get out of your head even for 1 minute?
She sits up and faces him.
Okay, let's do an experiment. Look at me. Look at me and tell me the first thing that comes to your mind.
I'm driving.
He glances at her.
Okay. I don't know you very well. I think you're beautiful and alive. And if you killed yourself, it wouldn't just be sad. It would be a tragedy.
Shut up.
She sits back and stares out her window. They arrive behind the morgue and open the back of the van.
You know, the head or the feet?
Head.
They struggle to haul the body from the van to a loading area where they leave it on the pavement.
Oh, hey, Isla. What are you up to? Oh, nothing much, Jim. I'm just lugging the corpse through a parking lot.
Why'd you go with Jim?
Don't be jealous of hypothetical Jim.
Believe me, if hypothetical Jim makes you not want to kill yourself, I can be supportive.
Would we just leave it here?
Believe it or not, it's my first time returning a corpse, so I'm improvising.
Parked a discreet distance away, Isla is on a cell phone.
Hi, yeah, I was just driving by, and this is kind of weird, but there seems to be, like, a dead body laying in your parking lot.
Will gets out of the van.
Sorry, yeah, no, bad reception on the island. Yeah, the body seems to be abandoned, and I don't know. I mean, unless, of course, you guys are playing, like, some sort of fucked up scavenger hunt. Okay, yes, thank you. Bye.
She hangs up. Will gives a questioning look, then climbs back into the driver's seat. They watch two morgue workers retrieve the body.
Yeah, they're pretty confused.
What do you think they're thinking?
I don't know, but I think Pat Phillips has had a really tough few days.
We're both going to hell.
Yeah, whatever the afterlife is.
She locks her eyes on him. Then turns in her seat and pulls him into a long, tender kiss. She sits back and fastens her seatbelt while he shifts awkwardly and starts the engine. Later, Will sits alone in an office with a computer tablet, replaying a blurry black and white video recording taken from the laboratory monitor. He studies the images as seen through someone else's eyes, walking through the hospital corridor, then staring through a windowed door at the dark-haired woman as she sits by the patient's bed. The woman makes eye contact, gets up, opens the door, and comes into the corridor.
Are you going to see him? Or are you just going to continue to ignore it?
I'm sorry. I can't.
Of course you can't.
Will freezes the video on an image of the hospital emergency entrance. Then he opens a laptop and does an internet search for photos of hospitals near me. He scrolls through various photos on the laptop, then enlarges one that seems similar. He holds up the tablet next to the laptop and compares the pictures. He touches the tablet image, then spreads his fingers to zoom in and shift the picture sideways so that it matches the laptop photo exactly. Will finds Toby standing in the auditorium where others are setting up mats and chairs.
Can I borrow your truck? I have to go get some stuff.
Toby tosses the keys to Will. Soon afterwards, Will gets out of the pickup truck to open the gate where the grassy laneway meets the main road. Next, he is driving along a coastal highway. The sea is gray and rough, with whitecaps rushing to shore. Later, he drives toward the hospital seen in the video. He He pulls into a parking space and stares at the entrance, comparing it to a video image on the tablet. Next, he studies the tablet in a hospital waiting room, where a digital suicide tally displays the number 4,016,394. He snaps the tablet shut when a nurse approaches.
As far as our records indicate, we've had 23 patients with the name Phillips on file.
How accurate are your records?
Accurate.
I would love to see that list.
I'm sure you would.
She walks away. The last three digits of the suicide tally jump from 394 to 401. Will gets off a hospital elevator with the tablet in hand. He looks around strangely as he proceeds down a corridor while playing back the video. He compares his surroundings to the video playback as he follows an identical corridor, rounds an identical corner, and passes an identical nurse's station. He comes to a dead end where the video corridor continues. He double-checks the tablet, then stands frowning at a closed door dead ahead.
What the fuck?
A janitor notices him.
Are you looking for something?
Maybe you can help me. Did there used to be a hallway here?
Used to. They did a little remodeling. Took their sweet ass time with it, too.
I'm sorry, how long ago was that remodel?
About a decade ago.
Daylight streams through large windows in the auditorium where the questionnaire equipment is set up on stage. Toby plays guitar for about 50 residents, grouped in the audience according to jumpsuit color, with yellow taking the front seats. Isla sits halfway back in a blue jumpsuit. Will arrives late, in plain clothes, and sits beside her.
This is interesting.
Toby adds a blow organ to his performance. Dr. Harbour takes the stage.
Well, hello to you all. As always, it's a pleasure. When you all first got here, you used this piece of equipment, the questionnaire. And your answers is what allowed you to stay here. So basically, a trust is built. But lately, I'm beginning to wonder if perhaps we're getting just a little bit too comfortable here. There's a lot of loose talk going on. And it makes me think that we just might be losing a little focus. Lacey, would you join me, please?
Lacey reluctantly steps forward from the front row where she sits alongside Cooper and Toby, all wearing yellow jumpsuits.
What's going on?
It's okay, relax. Would you like to tell us how long you've been here?
Just over a year.
Just over a year. You were one of the first. Now, how have you been treated? Have you been treated well? Have I been good to you?
You've been wonderful. Why are you talking to me like that?
I've been wonderful. If I've been wonderful, then why are you telling your peers about the device? And particularly, why are you saying it failed? Speak up. It's okay.
I just told one person. It slipped out when I had mentioned how the new girl was invited.
You mean Isla? You were displeased when I invited her here, weren't you?
It's just that some people who have been here much longer weren't asked.
Tell everyone where I found you. It's okay. This is a safe place.
Her eyes well up with tears.
In the woods.
Go on.
He gently wipes a tear from her cheek.
I had a gun.
And where was that gun aimed?
At my chest.
Right next to your heart. Usually it's the head, or the barrel goes into the mouth. I don't know that I've ever seen it done that way before.
I'm sorry. Please don't lose faith in me.
Faith? Oh, God, I have such contempt for that word. Show me someone who relies on faith, and I'll show you someone who's given up control over whatever it is they believe. I'm sorry, there's nothing more I can do for you, Lacey.
Thomas, please.
Pack up your belongings. Say your goodbyes.
She cries as she stands on stage, looking around at the audience. She wipes her nose with her sleeve and walks down the center aisle to the exit. Others turn in their seats, watching her go. Isla sits with her head down while Will watches Dr. Harbour pacing on stage. Afterwards, Will stands in Harbour's office.
Well, that was a hell of a show out there.
Come on, Will. You think I don't know a lot of this is bullshit? You give meaning to people who think they have no more reason to live. The jumpsuit, chain of command, the theatrics. It gives them purpose. And I care about them.
Yeah. Someone should tell that to Lacey.
You can pretend all you want that the reason you left was because you stopped approving of my work. Work, by the way, that we did together. But I think we both know this was never about the discovery for you. It was always about your mother.
Yes, of course it was about Mom for me.
He takes the family photo from his pocket, unfolds it, and holds it open before Harbour.
Just because you want to pretend like Mom did not happen doesn't mean that I'm going to.
He slaps the photo on the desk and walks out. Dr. Harbour snatches up the photo and studies it. Will finds Isla chatting with two women in the auditorium.
Hey, can I show you something?
What?
Just come with me, please.
Sorry.
They sit in the truck at night in the hospital parking lot. Isla studies the video on the tablet.
Wait, what is this?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
You were going to keep this from me?
No, I'm showing you now. And I was afraid of what you might do.
All right, so the afterlife, this is the afterlife?
How can that be the afterlife if we're sitting in the same parking lot that's in that recording?
Then what is it?
My theory is that my father invented something that records memory. You've heard him go on and on about the subconscious. I understand that you wanted this to be something different. The proof is overwhelming that that's a Pat Phillips memory.
Proof shouldn't be overwhelming. It should be definitive.
Inside the hospital, a nurse slides an ID card through a card reader, then opens a door and walks through. Will and Isla slip through the door just before it closes and proceed to a file storage room.
If what we're seeing on that video actually happened here in real life, I'm going to find out exactly when. Since this hospital opened, there have been 23 patients named Phillips. But based on the model of his truck, I can eliminate any Phillips from before the year 2000.
Yeah, but even after 2000, doesn't that leave a lot of names?
That hospital room doesn't exist anymore, so we can also cross off any Phillips the past decade.
He pulls a large file folder from a storage shelf.
That leaves us with one.
Isla studies the file.
Connor Phillips?
That's him. That's Pat Phillips' dad. He died here 13 years ago.
So it does just record a memory?
Later, Toby and Will lays in a dimly lit sitting room.
It's pretty fucked up what happened today, huh? With Lacey.
She spoke out of turn. And she knew the rules. She basically helped write them.
It's just you and me talking. You don't believe that.
Stop telling me what I believe, Will. non-existence of an afterlife destroyed Dad's own life. That's what I believe.
Yeah. Everybody else's too.
Dad has no intention of showing anything the machine records with the outside world. That's why he lost it when Lacey told people.
If he has no intention of showing what it does to anybody, then why is he doing it? Well, what's the point?
Why is he doing it? Let's see. Well, he'll tell you about the millions of people who died, and he'll tell you about finishing his work to honor them.
I heard that yesterday.
I've been hearing that for the past 2 years now. And I just smile and nod and agree. Like the idiot son, but I do understand things. I know. Mom died. Not died. She killed herself. She killed herself. And when you look at what Dad spent his life working on, and when you look at the way Mom killed herself, how she did it, how would Dad not feel a little anger on top of his guilt? Dad does need to know. He needs to know that she made it somewhere. He overreacted, that's all. He'll come to his senses and, Lacey will be back by tomorrow.
He taps on a framed family photo, which includes their mother.
Dad always comes to his senses.
He wanders out the door. Will finds Isla in the bunk bedroom, studying the video on the tablet. She is replaying the driving scene.
It's not a memory, Will.
What?
On his left arm in that exact same spot, there was a different tattoo.
How is that possible?
I don't know, but in the lab I saw it. It wasn't a lighthouse. It was waves on his arm.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm sure. Will, it's not a memory. This is something else.
If it's not a memory, then what is it?
No, everything we've seen doesn't exist anymore. I mean, the hospital room's gone. Pat Phillips, obviously gone. We need to find something in this video that still exists.
The woman. There's a...
He advances to a shot of the dark-haired woman.
Her. We have Connor Phillips' address on his death certificate, so I say that we go down there tomorrow and we see if somebody can help us track her down.
Sunlight flickers through tree branches. At the beach, the sky is overcast and the waves are calm. The pickup truck arrives in a seaside parking lot and parks facing the beach. Sitting in the passenger seat, Isla turns to Will.
Will, why are we back here?
Look, I don't know what's waiting for us at that house, and I... Do you remember I told you about my accident when I was a kid?
Yeah, and you lied to your mom about what you saw.
I didn't lie. I didn't lie. This is where I saw whatever... Whatever it is that I saw. This is the beach. I used to come here when I was a kid, like, I was drawn to it. It made me feel better. Anyway, when I saw you walking into the water the other day, that's why I was here.
She stares at him. The sun shines down as they sit side by side on the beach sand with a view of the whitecaps rolling in. Will watches Isla move the sand around with a stick. A breeze tousles her hair as she looks up and gazes out to sea with a somber expression.
had a son. He was 5 years old. And I fell asleep. Just for a second. But when I woke up, he was gone.
She uses the stick to draw an arrow in the sand. It points towards the water. Will moves closer to her, and she rests her head on his shoulder.
First, I thought I wasn't supposed to meet you. I don't feel anything. Maybe I was wrong.
He kisses her forehead. Later, they approach a middle-class suburban house. Standing on the front porch, Isla smooths her wind-blown hair while Will knocks on the door. A 30-something black woman in a white medical smock opens the door and looks at them.
Hi. Is this the Phillips residence? Did you know Connor Phillips?
Pat Phillips? Can you speak English?
She shuts the door.
Okay.
Okay, well, that's clearly not the woman from the video.
Maybe they moved or something.
Should we see if they have the new address?
I don't know.
A middle-aged redhead opens the door.
Can I help you?
It's the woman in the video. They sit around a kitchen table.
I haven't seen my brother in years. I'd call it more of a loss for her than for me.
An old woman in a wheelchair.
Alzheimer's. She deteriorated after Dad died.
Connor?
You know my father, too?
You know, actually, Pat mentioned him, that he went to see him before he died.
Well, anyway, Dad died, and Mom, she started going downhill real fast after that. My husband and I, we own the house now.
Is there going to be a service or anything for Pat?
I wouldn't know.
I'm sorry, if you don't mind me saying, you don't seem that upset about your brother's death.
Look, it seems as though you liked him, you found something in him. So I'm sorry. But to the rest of us, he was a piece of shit who left his sister with a cancer-ridden father and a mother who lost every marble she ever had.
I'm sorry, so is the last time that you saw Pat when he went to visit your dad in the hospital?
I don't know what bullshit he hauled you away, but he never visited my father in the hospital. If he told you that, it's a lie. He called and said he was gonna visit him, but he never showed up.
This is gonna sound really strange, but did Pat have a tattoo?
He told you about that?
Oh. She pushes up her sleeve and displays a wave tattoo on her forearm.
When he turned 18, we got matching waves. We were really close then.
Will and Isla exchange glances. Back at the mansion, Isla sits cross-legged on the top bunk while Will hovers nearby.
So the machine doesn't record a memory. It wasn't a bad theory.
People are just gonna keep killing themselves.
You know, sooner or later, you're gonna have to forgive your dad, Will.
I've been thinking a lot about the difference between what something is and what something means. And I don't know what any of this is. But I do think if there's a meaning to any of it, it has something to do with not pressing the reset button, even if things get really rough.
He lies down on the bottom bunk and crosses his arms.
A bunch of people running around making the same mistakes over and over. And I don't know why we think it'll be different somewhere else. Unless we learn what we're supposed to learn while we're here.
She climbs down and lies beside him. She stares straight ahead. He turns to look at her.
What was your son's name?
Oliver? I was dreaming. When he was in the water, I was dreaming.
What about?
I don't know. I can't remember. It's one of those times where you know for sure you're dreaming, but you just don't know what about. I wish I knew.
They lie side by side on their backs, staring straight ahead. He glances at her. She curls into him, and they kiss. Toby storms into the room.
Will! Fuck, Will! Get up! It's Dad, what the fuck are you doing?
What about Dad?
It's Dad, get the fuck up!
Okay, all right.
They follow Toby through the halls.
I didn't know, so I couldn't stop it.
Just slow down and tell me exactly what happened.
He hooked himself up to the device. He wanted to prove that it works.
Dad's hooked up right now?
Yes!
Wait, we just get in there and tell him that it works.
What works?
In the lab.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you not bringing him back?
He's too far along.
We already know that it records something.
Cooper, it works, okay?
A blurry black and white scene Dad. Plays out on the monitor.
Dad.
Time to clear yourself away. Back to reality. Come
home. Dad.
That's wrong.
What I'm doing is reality. I need to finish the support, do you understand?
Their anniversary?
I'm going upstairs.
Now don't be dramatic. I'll be done soon. Then we can have dinner.
While Dr. Harbor lies unconscious, hooked up to the machine via the electrode net and wires, the others watch events taking place on the monitor as if seen through his eyes. He walks past a dining table arranged with candles and two place settings to a staircase leading up from an entrance hall.
Honey, wait.
His fair-haired wife pauses on her way upstairs.
Maybe work can wait, so what do you say we have some dinner?
She hesitates and looks up the stairs. Then she turns and makes her way back down.
She's not taking him back.
That's not what happened,
you know?
We can bring him back.
Cooper, just wait. We have to see what happens.
We've got to do it now or it'll be too late.
Will, come on.
Toby, I'm sorry.
Cooper, now!
Dad, listen to me. Dad, please, listen to my voice.
Is he gonna be?
I don't know. I don't know.
Cooper, hit it again.
Dad.
Dr. Harbor opens his eyes and blinks heavily.
What happened?
Later, daylight streams through a large window as he sits up in bed, fully dressed with a tablet in hand, watching the video of his wife descending the stairs.
I knew I saw her. Like a dream that you can't remember.
I can't figure out what this is, Dad.
I never left my study, never stopped her on the stairs. And she drew a bath.
I know. And in the Pat Phillips recording, he has a different tattoo on his arm.
I always said the afterlife was a different plane of existence. But...
he moves to a desk.
What if it's a different plane of this existence?
Alternate realities?
No, our reality. With differences and variations. Stepping out of a truck to visit a dying parent. Random, like different tattoos. Stopping someone from going upstairs to end their life. When we die, what if we travel to an alternate version of our own life? A second chance.
Then we wouldn't just have to accept our biggest regret. In the afterlife, we could change it.
Yeah. At the risk of stating the super fucking obvious, if you are right and word of this got out...
we have to destroy the machine.
Later, Harbor and his sons are in the lab, flipping switches, disconnecting wires, and moving equipment around. Cooper pokes his head in.
Hey, Thomas. Everyone wants to know what's going on.
The sun shines as everyone assembles at the big tree.
Welcome, everybody. Nice to have you all here. I asked you to gather here today because I thought that we should be honest.
Will and Isla share a kiss.
Ourselves, honest with each other.
Good to see you.
I see you as family, and I think you see me the same way. And as family, I think sometimes we get so absorbed with what we're doing individually, we go off on our own track and so forth, we lose the fact that how important family is.
Everyone turns to see Lacey pointing a pistol.
Lacey?
Toby and Harbor approach her.
Lacey, it's okay. Put the gun down.
Lacey, I was wrong. You do not need to do this.
I didn't kill her. I just relocated her.
Isla's abdomen is soaked with blood.
Isla? Oh. Isla? Isla, oh, it's okay. Isla, Dad!
She collapses in Will's arms.
Dad, please, I need your help.
Lacey drops the gun, and Toby leads her away while Isla holds her stomach and writhes on the ground.
Don't talk. Just breathe.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A momentary underwater view in the churning sea. Will holds Isla's head as she goes limp and closes her eyes. A flash of the two of them wading in seawater. A little boy is playing in shallow water on the beach. She is unresponsive. Will remains hunched over her, his hands cradling her head. The screen goes black. A view of the big barren tree on the vast green lawn as the autumn sun glares through clouds. Toby walks toward the tree in his yellow jumpsuit. He exhales smoke, then swings in a basket chair suspended from one of the branches. Toby and Dr. Harbor are huddled together in the hallway outside the bunk bedroom.
They were asking the cops who to contact for Isla next of kin in that deal.
I'll have Cooper look into it. I don't want to overwhelm him with questions right now, okay?
Okay, yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Maybe I should just go in there and check on him.
No. Don't.
He needs rest. He needs to process.
Okay. Right.
You check on him after dinner. And then we'll finish breaking down the machine tonight.
But we haven't come close to figuring this all out yet, or what it all means. Like, if it really is another version of our own life, then what happens when we die again?
Toby. Toby.
What?
We've got to let it go for a while. It's got to.
Lying in the bottom bunk, Will turns his head toward the door. Later, he is moving equipment around in the lab. Dr. Harbour and Cooper approach the laboratory door and find it locked.
Completely dismantled. All traces need to be gone.
Thomas, I hear you.
Inside, Will boots up the machine while reclined on the examination bed with the electrode net on his head. He pants breathlessly as he covers his nose and mouth with a clear mask. He stares at the lit-up cylinder above his head and the web of wires running into it.
William? Let us in. Don't do this. William?
The mask fogs up as he breathes more deeply and calmly through his open mouth. His staring eyes glaze over and eventually close. The view ascends, following the wires into the glaring circle of light over his head. Then the screen goes white. The white screen transitions to a close-up of turbulent greenish water and white caps. The view widens to reveal the ferry boat wake as it crosses the sea, with sunlight dancing on the water's surface. Will stands on deck, looking around strangely as the wind ruffles his hair and overcoat. In the lab, Toby frantically wheels IV equipment over to the bed while Dr. Harbour makes adjustments to the electrode net on Will's head. Toby suddenly stops and stares at the monitor screen, which shows Will entering the ferry boat passenger lounge.
He's on the ferry headed here?
Not the same here.
What? I don't understand. How are we watching this right now if he's not dead?
Since Thomas Harbour.
The news broadcast is playing in the deserted lounge. Will turns the TV off, then grimaces and pinches the bridge of his nose as quick flashbacks occur of events he experienced with Isla.
I was watching that.
Will looks around, searching with his eyes.
Isla? Isla?
It's off-season. Why the hell are you going to this dreary island?
Isla!
He sees her, reclined over three adjoined seats.
I have to stop your shooting, Isla.
Sit down.
I need you, no, I need you to come with me right now!
Sit down, Will. This is just your memory. I'm a part of you. Sit down.
He sits across from her.
What are we doing back on this ferry? What the fuck is going on?
Until this life.
This life? What do you mean, this life?
You always start back on the ferry.
Flashback.
Reality and fantasy are mutually exclusive. They don't exist in the same space.
Well, it looks like we're here.
You know what? I changed my mind. I don't know what I was thinking.
The current life.
The first time you never even got off the ferry. And the next day you read that a woman named Isla had drowned herself. And you went on and lived your life, but the thought that you could have done something never left you. It was always there.
Scenes of Will staring pensively, sitting in an apartment, a cafeteria, and an office. Walking in a parking garage and a laboratory, on a city sidewalk and a staircase, waiting for a subway train. Current life on the ferry boat with Isla.
And then one day, just like everybody else,
how long have I been stuck living in this loop?
How many times have we met on this ferry? Your death brings you back here. You keep coming back over and over again and again.
I don't remember anything. I don't
don't remember these other lives.
Nobody can remember them directly. But sometimes certain memories do have a way of sticking out.
Flashbacks.
You look so familiar to me. It's your lucky day. I don't normally carry these around.
This is where I saw whatever.
This is the beach.
How do you know this is where you're going to be staying?
There are a bunch of people running around making the same mistakes over and over. I just don't know why we think it's going to be different someplace else.
Current life.
What am I supposed to change?
You changed it. You kept coming back until you saved me.
I didn't save you. You died.
There's more than one way to save somebody, Will.
Hearing voices.
Cooper, ready in our end. We need to bring him back.
How can I hear my dad? He's in a different place.
Two separate parts in the same place.
Okay, Dad, the defibrillator's charged.
No. I'm not ready to go back yet. I need more time with you. Toby, please wait, not yet!
His vitals are concerning me. If we pull him now, we might lose him.
I'll please, I'm not ready to leave you. What's happening to me?
You're about to die, Will.
His heart is stopping, Thomas. The organs are shutting down.
They're trying to bring you back.
That's okay, because if I die, I'm just gonna come back here to you, right?
Here anymore. You already helped me get to where I needed to be, and now you'll go someplace else.
When I get there, will I be able to remember you?
I hope so.
Dad? Everything's shutting down. His brain's showing barely any activity.
I'm leaving now. This is it.
I'm not leaving this room until we revive my son.
When I get there, I'm going to remember you.
We've got to pull him out right now. One, two, three.
The screen goes white. The white screen transitions to a wide view of the ocean on a sunny day as whitecaps roll to shore. Will stands on the beach in his overcoat, looking out at the waves. He looks around pensively, then turns to his right and strolls along the sandy shore with his hands in his coat pockets. While walking, Will looks over his shoulder at people in the distance. Then he looks searchingly from left to right with a bewildered expression. He catches sight of a little boy in a jacket and rubber boots, playing alone at the water's edge. Will runs his eyes around the beach in all directions, then returns his attention to the boy, who is toting a pail into the waves. The boy loses his footing in the rolling water and keeps toppling over. Will runs in and carries him out.
Hey! Look! You okay? Hey, come here! Let me help you! Come here.
Are you okay?
Yeah. Oh, I'm home.
You went down pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
Yep. You okay? I gotcha. Whoa. Where's your mom and dad?
Isla comes running.
Hi. He's all right. He just was... Okay.
I told you, you can't
just run off on me like that, okay? I told you. He's all right. He was struggling a little bit in the water. I want to make sure he got back to you.
Isla cuddles Oliver.
Thank you.
Yeah. He's a good kid. You're okay.
She carries him off.
Can you walk a little bit?
Oliver latches his arms around her neck, and she continues to carry him toward a sandy ridge. Will turns away and saunters back in the direction he came from. Will gradually comes to a stop and stands thinking with his hands in his pockets. He slowly turns in the direction of the sandy ridge and stares with a furrowed brow. His expression suddenly lightens, and the screen goes black.
She's submarines, the rope loops round her feeble feet. Before the dawn breaks on the sorry grasp, in a blink and in one motion, rope constricts, rips her towards the ocean. She never fights her bearings, sucking splash into her lungs.
Credits. Directed by Charlie McDowell. Written by Charlie McDowell and Justin Later. Starring Jason Segel, Rooney Mara, Jesse Plemons, Riley Keough, Ron Canada, and Robert Redford. Produced by Alex Orlovsky and James D. Stern. Executive producers Julie Goldstein, Lucas Smith, Mike Goodrich, Dimitra Singu, Hunter Gray, Charlie McDowell, Ian Brick, and Matt Levine. Co-producer Erica Hampson. Director of Photography, Sterla Brandt Groveland, DFF. Production designer Aiken McKenzie. Editor Jennifer Lilly. Music by Danny Benzi and Sondra Jurians. Costume designer Carrie Langerman. Casting by Courtney Bright and Nicole Daniels. An ALO Films production. A film by Charlie McDowell. Dedicated to Randy Markowitz. Copyright 2017, Discovery Pictures Distribution, LLC. All rights reserved.
No, I cannot see, I can hear. Her smile as she sings. No, I cannot see, I can hear. Her smile as she sings.
The Discovery. On stage in the sunlit auditorium, Toby takes off his electric guitar and puts it on a stand. He shuts down equipment, collects a few items, leaves the stage, and heads for the exit. Cut to black. Letters pop out from a white background, then turn red. Netflix.